Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, pharmacist Eric Christensen. Thank you so much for listening today. As always, go check out reallifepharmacology.com. If you haven't subscribed there, do that. I give away a free 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs. Great little study guide, great little refresher if you're doing pharmacology classes, taking board exams, final exams, great little resource refresher. That's not going to cost you a dime there. So simply an email. We'll get you that. We'll get you updates on when we've got new content and things available too. So again, reallifepharmacology.com. Go check that out. All right, so let's get into the drug of the day today, and that is melatonin. And this is a medication, or I guess it's more classified as a supplement, at least in the United States, readily available over the counter. And from my experience, it is readily taken by a lot of patients. It feels like about 20 to 30% of patients are taking melatonin. That might be an exaggeration and a little bit high, but I can assure you in my work as a consultant, I see it on a daily basis for sure. So, with that said, it's used primarily for insomnia and to help with sleep. Mechanistically, how does it do that? Well, melatonin is actually found naturally occurring in the body, and it promotes sleep and the circadian rhythms, the kind of sleeping and waking cycle. And it's actually made from the amino acid tryptophan. So you've always heard, or maybe you've heard around Thanksgiving, and turkey and tryptophan, it makes you sleepy and that type of thing. And so that's kind of a little bit where that comes from, in that tryptophan is a kind of a building block for the production of melatonin. So interestingly, kind of as a person ages, this secretion of this hormone that helps promote sedation and sleepiness and that type of thing varies with age. So at approximately 3 to 4 months, melatonin production kind of begins, and with that it starts to help kind of ensure that sleep-wake cycle, which makes a lot of sense if you think about younger children, babies, they generally don't sleep well at night. They don't have that routine and that schedule, and melatonin certainly may play a role in kind of the development of, when it's time to go to sleep and when it's time to get up and that type of thing. So this melatonin production, release, secretion peaks at around the toddler age, 1 to 3, somewhere in there. And then it kind of stabilizes, plateaus, and then obviously as patients get into adulthood and, age, this secretion actually does decline over time. So in a geriatric patient, for example, that secretion may be a lot less than when they were 20 years old, for example. And I think this, potentially, theoretically, has a significant role in that, insomnia is fairly common in elderly adults, so that certainly could play a role there, and might be why you see melatonin used in those type of situations in elderly patients, or see it so frequently. So one of the challenges I have with melatonin is it is considered a dietary supplement, and so companies don't really have to go through the usual FDA process, phase 1, phase 2, phase 3 clinical trials. And so that leads to a little bit of lack of regulation on, which products are, adequate and which ones, might not make the grade and that type of thing. And so that gives me a little pause for concern, as always, or at least gives me something to think about if patients aren't responding or aren't doing well or whatever, or potentially having adverse effects. You know, are they using a reputable manufacturer and that type of thing? So that certainly can be a challenge for sure. I would say the majority of patients, at least from the evidence and studies, probably take too much melatonin. The most common doses I see are usually 3 to 6 milligrams. I have seen patients take up to 10 to 20 milligrams, which is probably way more typically than a normal patient's going to need. Studies indicate that low doses, probably in the 0.3 to 0.5 milligrams, maybe even down to 0.1 milligram, are adequate for what the body physiologically needs. And while it might be tolerated at 3 milligrams, 5 milligrams, 10 milligrams, it's probably, you know, overkill a little bit in most situations. So again, you're going to have patients that say, you know, nope, lower dose didn't work, higher doses work, you know, and it's hard to argue with that when you're discussing it with a patient. But I really try to address the melatonin, and there's definitely a few questions I think about. So first and foremost is did it help when the patient started it? And oftentimes I'll see patients taking either more than one over-the-counter sleep aid, or they will be taking a prescription sedating agent, so like a trazodone or a mirtazapine or a Z drug like Zolpidem, and melatonin. And you know, it's a little bit of, you know, digging into that patient history and say, hey, which one came first? Like, do we need both of these? Which one's provided more benefit? So digging into that and addressing that when we're talking polypharmacy is a big concern, because often these patients are on, you know, 10, 20 plus medications. So did it help? And are they using more agents or other agents to help with sleep as well? Is definitely a question I ask. Is it hurting? I would say in most cases, it's pretty well tolerated. You know, however, I have seen occasional issues with some CNS changes, things like over-sedation, some cognitive impairment kind of concerns, again, particularly at higher dosages. So I typically try to steer people towards lower doses if they're asking me in most situations. There is also the rare concern for elevated prolactin levels. So if you remember dopamine blocking agents such as antipsychotics, these can cause that risk, and that can lead to, you know, sexual dysfunction, infertility risks, inappropriate milk production and release from the breasts in females. There's been associations with lower bone mineral density. So there are some potential risks with it, and I tend to get more and more concerned as the doses escalate for the patients there. So again, critical question, is it hurting the patient in some way, shape, or form? I generally ask, are they willing to try or taper off or at least reduce the dose? So that's a good question to ask, particularly if they picked it up over the counter and they started taking 5 milligrams and they say it helps. Well, how do you know 2.5 milligrams wouldn't work? Or 1 milligram wouldn't work. So again, just making sure if the patient absolutely feels like they need it, that we're minimizing the dose is an important thing to look at and do there. And then of course, you know, maybe even prior to all this, I'm looking at that med list saying, hey, is this patient on stimulants? Are they on medications that could worsen insomnia? So, you know, of course, caffeine comes up. Some of the antidepressants are more activating than others, you know, such as bupropion. Are they actually on a stimulant for some reason, ADHD medication or something like that? Yeah, prednisone, I mentioned caffeine intake is important to assess there. So, you know, it's a good situation to get a pharmacist involved, especially if patients on multiple medications. And you're not comfortable with them, definitely, yeah, send them to a pharmacist and have that med list reviewed. Make sure we're not causing the insomnia, which is causing the use of melatonin there. All right, so let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material, like pharmacotherapy, ambulatory care, MTM, geriatrics, go check out meded101.com/store. In addition, if you're a pharmacy student, we've got NAPLEX content as well and links to rxgrad.com. So go check that out. If you're a healthcare professional just looking for more education on pharmacology, drug interactions, definitely go check out meded101.com/store. Got a ton of different links to books and educational materials that can really be beneficial for various groups of healthcare professionals that have to work with a lot of these patients that are on 5, 10, 20 plus medications. So again, meded101.com/store. Your support there certainly helps this podcast, helps us keep it free and available for all to benefit from. All right, so let's wrap up with drug interactions. I would say there's probably not a ton with melatonin, so that's a good thing. Probably the first thing that comes to mind is kind of those additive effects, so sedating type agents, you know, that a patient's taking. You know, we could definitely overly sedate the patient if we add on melatonin to a patient taking, you know, diphenhydramine, cyclobenzaprine, Z drugs, opioids, gabapentin, all the sedating agents that you can think of. We could certainly have an additive effect there. Hyperprolactinemia. So if you've got dopamine blocking agents, such as the antipsychotics, like I mentioned, or metoclopramide, there could be an elevated risk for running into hyperprolactinemia if melatonin's added. So again, more and more likely as we get to higher doses, but something to pay attention to there. Propranolol may reduce concentrations or the effect from melatonin, so that's one to think about clinically. Caffeine, alcohol intake, you know, these can mess with insomnia. So again, going back and you want to reassess those patients and see, you know, what they're doing in their life potentially that could increase the risk of insomnia, hopefully before we add the medication. But in patients that aren't responding, that might be a situation where, you know, maybe they've started to increase their caffeine intake or something else is going on. So again, do that thorough investigation, help prevent and reduce the risk for drug interactions there. All right, so I think that's going to wrap up the podcast for today. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a rating review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Go check out reallifepharmacology.com. Sign up, get that free 31-page PDF, kind of a no-brainer there. And share us with friends, colleagues, those that are going through healthcare classes and pharmacology classes specifically. Share the podcast, and hopefully they can pick up some practice pearls as well as kind of refreshing them for their exams or board exams, whatever they're working on. So again, appreciative to all of you who have been sharing the podcast, and the growth of the podcast has been far beyond what I ever could imagine. So I truly want to thank you guys for the help and support for sure. So if you got comments, questions, mededucation101@gmail.com is the best place to reach me. Otherwise, you can connect with me on LinkedIn as well. I'm fairly active there. Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCG, BCPS. So I'm going to sign off for today. Thanks so much for listening. Take care. Hope you have a great rest of your day.